Hey, it's Mentally Chill podcast time. Welcome back to the show. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. I know I'm normally not up at this time, but I couldn't sleep for whatever reason. So it's 9 o'clock and someone's mowing their lawn. I think that's a little bit assuming that everyone has their lives together and that we're all awake, that it's okay to mow your lawn. There should be a law where they have some respect for people who may not have it together, and you can't mow your lawn until at least 11 a.m. That should be a law. So I hope you guys can't hear the sound of the lawnmower. But you know, in the suburbia world that I'm in currently, there's just constant lawnmowers, which is good because then it drowns out the sounds of everyone crying. Just kidding. No, people have very pleasant lives here. I'm the one whose tears are being drowned out by the sounds of lawnmowers and weed whackers and leaf blowers and all the things that give my dad things to do. Today's show, I have my friend Dan on, and Dan was the guy who recommended that amazing website I told you guys about called youfeellikeshit.com. He's on talking about a very bizarre phenomenon or experience that he had called conversion disorder, which is a condition where a person has blindness, paralysis, or other neurological symptoms that cannot be explained by medical evaluation and can be triggered by a reaction to stress or psychological trauma. It's not always the case, but could be the case. And that's what Dan experienced. He didn't experience the blindness, but he had tingling, loss of muscle control, stuff like that. We also talk about the 30-day stoic challenge, which is not what I thought it would be, which I thought by the name, it would just be people putting their emotions away and acting strong for 30 days. But what it is 30 actionable challenges per day, a different challenge a day. And it's rooted in stoic philosophy. And what is stoic philosophy, you ask? Well, I have an answer for you. Not off the top of my head, but off of the computer because I am staring at Google. And Stoic philosophy teaches the development of self-control and fortitude as a means of overcoming destructive emotions. So if you're having destructive emotions, the Stoic challenge is a good thing to do, the 30-day Stoic challenge. I did the 30-second Stoic challenge. I made it about 15 seconds in, which I actually thought was an accomplishment. But maybe you guys can do the full 30 days if you're feeling up to it. I suggest doing it. Before any of that, of course, Patreon, 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 Patreon. How annoying is that word? Patreon. It's annoying, but it helps me do this show. So thank you to everyone for your continued support. I appreciate it more than you know. And this week's very special inductee to the cult is Brett from Australia. Brett, thanks for coming. I'm going to have you turn in any forms of ID because you now are mine. Welcome to the cult. And a couple announcements, one to do with Patreon, one not to do with Patreon. First one, Patreon, October 26th, we'll be doing a movie night together, which we do over the computer. It's in a chat room. We get to watch a movie together and we'll be doing a scary one for Halloween. And also December 1st, if you're on the East Coast or in the Northeast or somewhere where you can access New York City, I'll be on the dais of the roast of Shane Spencer, who is an ex-Yankee. We'll be doing it at Caroline's on Broadway. December 1st, I'm going to be making fun of dudes that wouldn't date me in high school. Finally, I get my revenge. So come check that out. You can get your tickets online. Just Google Roast of Shane Spencer. And I think the tickets are cheap for the next couple of days. And then they'll go back up to full price. But please get your tickets to come see me roast the hell out of a D-bag. Let's do it. And one more thank you. Thank you so much for your rating and commenting. It makes a huge difference in the success of the show. So take one itsy bitsy second and click 5 stars on iTunes if you enjoy the show. And I don't know what this week's show disclaimer will be, so I'll just tell you, I taped a lot of the episode with my feet up on Dan's desk in his office. So I looked like a real cocky jerk. So if that comes through my voice, I apologize. Anyway, that's it for me. Thank you so much for coming and enjoy this week's episode. What I want to say about you before we start, I mean, we're starting, but as we start, what I want to say about you is a lot of people don't believe that the combination of an athlete and someone who's also deep coexist. And you're an example of someone who was a football player, a jock in high school, but you were like the deepest guy I knew. That's and right. I have to put the word like before deepest so that it's not too deep. Because if I said, you're the deepest person I know, that's too deep. So I have to say, you're like the deepest, because then it makes it not so deep for me to even say that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. It was funny in high school, kind of to further that dichotomy in a stranger direction. Every year, you know, they had that drug awareness stuff, like somebody would come in and do a story and a counselor or whatever. So when that was going on, it would always seem to coincide with picture day or whatever. I never did drugs or anything like that, a good time, but I liked a certain kind of music, so I'd be wearing tie-dyed shirts. So the guy up there doing his public speaking about drugs and everything like that would always end up singling me out and, you know, the inside guy on the smoking weed, he gets the jokes and everything like that. And, you know, so everybody kind of got a kick out of that. Like,
well, but I'm sorry tie-dye looks so weird on you because you're a Goomba Italian. Imagine John Gotti wearing a tie-dye shirt. That's what it looks like with you with a tie-dye shirt.
Yeah, that's fair. I would agree with that.
You guys put on some Frank Sinatra and then the Grateful Dead. Yes. Just a normal transition. So you're on here as my friend, but you're also super smart. And so I'm using you to make the show sound smarter than it is, just like I did with Jordan Harbinger last week with the fMRI and MRI and all that kind of stuff. I want to talk to you about your experience with an MRI, but also the stoic challenge that you told me about. Mm-hmm. But I guess we'll start with the health stuff that you finally are now kind of in the clear from, or you have a little bit of an answer to. And you seemed like it was weighing very heavily on you, which I shouldn't say seemed, it did weigh very heavily on you. And you would send me some messages occasionally about the stress of what you're going through. But basically, tell me what was happening. You were having tremors and stuff, but you didn't know if it was a neurological problem or a mental problem. I hate to say mental problem, but mental issue or emotional issue, because you had some massive stress you had been dealing with. And then you finally found out that it wasn't physical. It was your emotions wreaking havoc on your body.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know how, you know, we can go really far down the rabbit hole to kind of peel this onion, but going through, you know, certainly a suboptimal period in my life, several years of legal battles between myself, the company I'd started, and a former employer.
No, I thought it was you were suing McDonald's because the coffee was too hot. Wasn't that you?
That would have been a much much more pleasing outcome to a case.
Lifetime supply of coffee.
So it was something that you start out going on this journey of, well, I've got to go through 6 months of a bad time and then it'll be over and life will get back to normal. And then just the way the legal system works, you know, what was supposed to, you know, probably take a year turned into 7 years. And so you could face these sort of things, but then you start to get to a point where, while I'm in purgatory and, you know, I really don't know, you know, when this is going to end. And, you know, it gets to a point of you don't look forward to things because you're wondering, oh, what's going to interfere with a court date, or, you know, how is this going to interfere with my life? And so I guess without my fully realizing it, I got into a really, you know, bad place, you know, certainly depression wise. And, you know, it started to affect my personality. And then, you know, I would talk to people and they'd say, oh, you're stressed out. And then that comes with the territory. And I started to feel like, you know what? I know what I'm going through. I've got a handle on that. You know, it sucks, but I'm going to get through it. I'm going to tough it out. And then all of a sudden, you know, without relating one to the other, I'm thinking, I feel kind of funny. You know, I would wake up and, you know, my hands are tingling and I don't have, almost like you slept on your arms wrong or whatever. And it's like, everything's not waking up the right way. And like you said, I'd been an athlete my whole life I'm not in the greatest shape, but, you know, used to doing certain things and playing in a recreational basketball league and start playing and, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing stars or, you know, you go to...
That was just me.
You're in town that weekend. And you'd go to catch a ball, you know, normalist things, and it'd go through your hands and...
That's just being a white dude playing basketball, isn't it? Did you for a second think maybe because I'm 36 years old, maybe my body doesn't work the way, not that that makes us old, but did you think maybe your body didn't work the same way as it used to?
Well, yes and no. Like, I started to wonder, you know, is this getting older? But then, you know, there'd be, and, you know, certainly I can recognize, you know, that in some aspects of doing these things. But, you know, to talk to somebody else, you know, they're not, you know, saying, oh, you look, you know, you look like you're falling off or anything. It's just like, you know, still, oh, he's, you know, the toughest guy out there or whatever's going on. So it's almost like trying to gauge the way other people were reacting to me. And, you know, it's, they, you know, treated and expected, you know, the usual from me. And, the, you know, there'd be, you know, one night where everything's normal and then another night where it's kind of strange. And that was what was disconcerting to me, because it's just like, if you went out and, you know, on Monday you jumped so high and Tuesday you jumped the same height and Wednesday you jumped the same height, you're like, you know, this is what it is. And if it's getting older, that's normal.
And also the guy picking teams, he's like, oh, Dan's a solid guy, I'll pick Dan. And then all of a sudden you're like rubber fingers. And I'm like, what the hell?
And even if it's something that somebody's not going to say to you, you're sitting there questioning yourself. And I think that's the worst part, because you're saying, what, you know, what just happened right there? And why, you know, why am I, you know, seeing spots and stars and everything like that? And chalk it up to, you know, maybe something I ate, or I didn't, you know, didn't take care of myself the right way. And, you know, started out going too hard, too fast that night. And, you know, as things went on and, you know, kind of, again, life wasn't going in a great direction, it started to get more and more serious and severe. And, you know, I went to the doctor and, you know, explained, you know, the sensations I was having. And obviously, by that point, I had made the horrible, horrible mistake of becoming a Google doctor and looking up everything online.
That's where I got my degree.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be the final, you know, insult to the injury of the last several years, that, you know, I'm starting to think, oh my God, I got something seriously wrong with me.
What were you starting to think it could be?
I was in the, and this is pretty severe, but I'm looking at what I'm reading and what I'm experiencing, and I'm thinking, well, I hope it's MS, because I'm looking at that. I'm looking at Parkinson's and, you know, looking at ALS based on these things that were going on. And, you know, I'd go to the doctor and I would say these things, and he'd say, you know, really quickly, you know, reflex test, and no, you're fine. It's, you know, it's just the stress and everything like that. And again, I'm in my own head and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm 6'2", you know, 250 pounds and, you know, solidly built. So I'm like, you know, maybe he's not going to, you know, figure out that, you know, how much strength I've lost since the last time. And, you know, so he would dismiss it. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm continuing to have the, you know, the same struggles and, you know, difficulty with balance at times. And finally, you know, again, things are progressing. I'm in front of the doctor and, you know, another checkup. And, you know, same thing, it's probably distress. And I said, you know, doctor, look at my face. Like, my facial muscles are twitching. Like, my jaw is twitching. This is not something I'm controlling. And finally, you know, I saw...
He's like, I thought you just liked me. You were winking. You wanted to go on a date. I thought you were hitting on me.
And finally, yeah, finally there was a note of concern. And he's like, well, you know, let's get you to a neurologist, because, you know, the first time it's like, well, I can, you know, get you on an antidepressant if you like. And
you know, you did try that, right?
Yeah.
And at the beginning, or no?
This was,
they gave you Xanax or something like that.
That came down the road, but okay. I'd been on antidepressants earlier in my life, and it was for me, an unpleasant experience. And, you know, I didn't like the person I was and, you know, the way I kind of interacted with life at that time. So, I didn't know if the doctor just, you know, was thinking this is somebody that just wants to be medicated and, you know, I'm going to just throw this option at him. But, you know, I said to him, I said, whatever.
He is in a tie-dye shirt. He probably wants something for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So the stereotype was following me around. But, no, I made it clear that, you know, whatever's going on, I want to understand it. You know, I don't want to just try and, you know, hide behind, you know, not feeling whatever's happening. And, you know, it's very, you know, disconcerting to me. So finally, it got to that point where it was, all right, let's go see, you know, let's get you to a neurologist. So that was the next step. And now at this point, it's not vindication. It's not, oh, I told you so. It's just, it's almost, you know, well, at least, you know, wherever we end up, at least we're on our way.
And, well, it's better to have an answer than not, even if the answer is bad. The unknown is the scariest.
Yeah,
like, I should be the unknown for Halloween. That's how scary the unknown is. But what is actually physically happening to cause you to have physical reactions to your emotions? Like, why, if you're experiencing stress, are you seeing spots? And why are you losing feeling in your hands because you're emotional? How is that even physically possible? I know our brains are so connected to our bodies and our, you know, our emotions tie into our physiology, but what actually was causing that? Do you know? Or not causing it, but what actually, like, how did that happen?
It's
just insane.
We talked about, and obviously this isn't a neurologist specialty, but a conversion disorder where you get to a certain point where it's almost, you fill up the bucket with stress and then, your brain,
took on as much as it possibly could. And then it had to overflow into the physical bucket.
And because I'm the guy that, for better or worse, and probably for worse for, certainly for some of the people around me, where it's just like, my brave face was a gruff exterior. So it's just like, I'm going to show up when I got to show up and I'm going to do what I got to do. And, some people are going to look at this and say, Dan's being a jerk today, or, I don't know what his problem is. He's really distant. And so for me, I thought I was coping this whole while by showing up and at least being present in these certain situations, where in the meantime, behind that, I'm a wreck, I'm a mess, I'm feeling terribly, but I'm thinking, I'm doing enough to get by. Some of these people, most of these people probably don't even notice the difference, so it's fine. But in reality, it was just continuing to progress that way because I wasn't doing anything to feel different or think different, and my external circumstances weren't changing either. So I just got to, like you said, the dam was breaking, and it was, all right, if you don't want to pay attention to these these mental signs, these psychological triggers and feelings, and you don't want to do anything about it, it's like, your mind-body connection is telling you in different ways, or telling me in different ways, like, you've got to change something.
It's so frustrating that we were given bad emotions. I know those emotions were programmed in us to help us stay warm because of the stress of being cold and things, but it's just like, how did people back in the day, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, have these same emotions and make it through? I just can't picture a guy in 1308 going, my emotions are, but they had to have these feelings. They were humans just like we were.
Well, the people that had those kind of problems were the ones that if you pissed off your feudal lord, his response is going to be, you're gone.
Right, off of this head.
Yeah, so.
Thanks, because my head's been bothering me. Honestly, that's what's been driving me crazy, is this head of mine. So what ended up happening for treatment for you?
First time visiting the neurologist, very much a, physical exam and testing reflexes. And he did this one thing, and it was funny. He grabbed my arm and, articulated it, taking, my shoulder through its range of motion, taking my, elbow through its range of motion, my wrist, and it was holding in a certain place, and he let go and I didn't move. And he looked at me and said, usually, when somebody does that, their arm falls as soon as I let go. He said, you're carrying around a great deal of stress, but at the same time, it's like your jaw is trembling. You're
tight as a drum.
Your cheeks and your face is twitching. So there are signs of things that don't look great. But his supposition was that this is indeed stress. Carried to a pretty extreme place. At the same time, let's do an MRI, let's do a CT scan, let's see if there's anything abnormal going on. And for me, finally, this is going to be where, if there's an answer, it'll be here. And so finally I'm like, all right, this is good. I want to see what's going on here. And so everything came back from that great. And so the next step was, all right, we got to do something to try and relax you, to see if that causes an abatement in, some of the things that are going on with you. I'm also saying, I don't understand why physically my response to this is seemingly much more overblown than my emotional response to this.
Your body was being a drama queen.
Yes, very much so. And so much strange and dumb things would happen. I remember being out at a bar with friends and, somebody, let's do shots. And they give me the shot glass and, somebody's looking at me and my hand shaking coming up to my face. And they're like, geez, how many did you have? Or, what are you hungover? I'm like, joke it off, laugh it off, but I'm, you know, I'm thinking, oh my God, this is like, this is horrifying. Like, so that was the whole thing. It's like mentally, yeah, I know where I'm at, but physically my body's saying, I don't think you do. And, you know, so it was a strange gap to cross. Then we got to the point where it was suggested, all right, let's put you on a course of Xanax. And again, not really keen on going that route, but at the same time, you know, we got to work through the process. So it's like, I was kind of satisfied at that point that, all right, this is what's next. And so agreeing to do that also, you know, compelled me to say, all right, I really have to take a look at what I can do to try and, you know, relax and reduce my stress and put myself on a better course, because I don't want it to be something that I'm relying on medication to get better if, in fact, that's what's going on with me. So I tried the Xanax for week and a half, 2 weeks, and some parts of it, yeah, it felt good initially, but then it almost got to be where there was a Xanax hangover, so to speak, after taking it.
I hate the Xanax hangover. I have to weigh, do I want to be not anxiety ridden now and feel like crap tomorrow and even lower and darker? Or do I want to suffer through this anxiety so I don't have to go through this deep low lull that I'll go in the morning? It's like, why does it have to have a hangover part? Is there a way that, at least with alcohol, when you have a hangover, you had fun, hopefully, most likely.
Yeah.
But Xanax, you're just like, meh, there's no fun. You didn't earn some fun. You're like, okay, now I deserve a hangover.
Yeah, there was no good story from the day before.
Exactly. At least come out of it with a story. It bums me out about Xanax, because I do find it to be a comfort in a way, where I know if I am severely panicked or having massive anxiety, there is some resolve. I just wish that you didn't have to pay for it the next day. But it's like, nothing in life is free kind of thing. If it's good, if it's too good to be true, it probably is, all of that kind of stuff. And it's just a bummer. Like, can't we just have a break? We're adults in this like shitty world where like every day is hard. Just give us one thing. And that one thing should be Xanax without a hangover. Anyway, so you tried the Xanax for about a week and a half, and then...
Like you're talking about, I would notice, and not even necessarily an improvement in the physical symptoms necessarily, but, you know, again, felt a little lighter for, you know, for part of the day. And like, not that it was a sign, but it was, you know, kind of an indicator of, all right, maybe this is something that I should explore, is figuring out how to feel better. And, you know, I won't take credit for it personally to say, so that's what I did. You know, I set out on this, you know, path and, you know, turned it around. But as luck would have it, the legal situation finally, you know, came to its conclusion, ironically, on the Ides of March. So,
wow.
So that was when, you know, everything finally ended.
Also, just for people listening, that's resident consultant Jen's birthday, March 15th. So anyway, keep going.
So that was the biggest change, that not that I was able to make in my life, but that I was fortunate enough to have happen in my life, is that finally this, you know, this massive cloud that was over my head, finally it was gone. And then I got to the point of, all right, now I get to live the rest of my life. And I think just having something to look forward to and having something to not worry about on that level was the biggest change for me. And that was when the weight of the world was off my shoulders. And, you know, it got easier from there to say, all right, now you got no excuse. Now you have every reason to focus on, you know, making some changes and trying to.
Love having an excuse. I'd be bummed if the lawsuit ended. I'd be like, damn it.
I
have no excuse for why I'm doing so terribly.
I was carrying that thing around. It was a ball and chain, but it was also, you know, the crutch for, you know, I was a jerk, you know, I was a zombie, and, you know, could you have done better? Yeah. But
you could have done
a lot
worse.
Did you choose
that?
Did you want to be in that situation? No.
So. I think you should feel proud of yourself for not just blowing up a courthouse with actual explosives. So you deserve a pat on the back.
Maybe if I had access to the resources and the finances now.
Did you take any other medication?
Nope. There was some different drugs, I guess, were offered to me, and even though I was adamant every time that that's not the road I want to go down. You know, it's going to talk to somebody a couple times, and you go in a month later or whatever, and they say, oh, you look so much better. It looks like you're doing so much better. Here's a prescription that'll, you know, take care of that sleeping problem that you have. And it's just like, I want to figure out, I want to figure out what's going on before I accept.
That's so admirable that you don't want the pills, but I'll take the Band-Aid, because I don't trust myself enough to do things to actually cure myself naturally my own way. Like so right now we're sitting here and you have this packet in front of me printed out.
I'm definitely home because I haven't seen anything printed out in like years. And I feel like the valley that we're from, we're still in like 1998. So this looks so 1998 for me and I'm grateful for it. I love it. But we're sitting with packets about this 30-day stoic challenge, which I would just end up falling asleep. I don't really know exactly what it is and you're going to tell me about it, but I wouldn't trust myself to do stuff like this. That's why I say, okay, give me the pills. Give me all the pills because I'm not printing out shit, reading it, especially reading it. Are you kidding me? No, thank you. And then implementing it into my life. Are you crazy?
Well, it's.
I love that you're looking at me like this should not be that difficult for me. Like it looks in your reaction, you just kind of look like, yeah, that's what you do because, you know, you work hard at something and you do it, but not me.
I think I would imagine that especially the things that you've accomplished that you would do very well with it if you did throw it on your back.
I underestimate my abilities. That's for sure. But okay, so have you done this 30-day challenge?
We're at day 10 right now, and so far so good. I think you come to think about.
Well, wait. I'm sorry. I don't want to cut you off. But before you get into that, what is the Stoic challenge?
Well, it's 30 days of trying to improve certainly every aspect of your life. And the hope is if it just improves one, you're better off. You know, Stoicism is a school of philosophy that's a very practical and pragmatic school of philosophy. And I think that's kind of what drew me to it or what I identified with. Some of the greatest thinkers, through history have been Stoics. And, this is stuff that you're not necessarily exposed to immediately.
Okay, I think I may be interpreting it wrong because I hear Stoic challenge, and I think that means you don't have emotion toward things and you remain stoic your behavior for 30 days.
That is the literal interpretation of it, but it's kind of
very literal,
but also a little bit of a misconception in that, as you consider the definition of Stoic is somebody that's reserved and without emotion and the strong silent type, so to speak. But the basis for it was the things around you and, how you relate to, what's going on in your life and that, for example, it's not what happens to you, it's how you react to it. So something can't bother you, something can't hurt you unless you choose to be bothered, unless you choose to be hurt by it. And, that's a big part of it is considering, what can I control? What can I not control? If you walked in here and said, I'm an asshole and, read me.
I did. That's how I walked in here.
And you saw my reaction.
You said, welcome, asshole.
Is that I can choose to let that bother me or, I can make a concerted effort to try and skip a beat.
Does that end up bottling up emotions?
Well, I don't think so. If we
could call this the 30-day bottle up emotions.
Well, if you go to Serenity Now and right. Sanity Later, but the biggest part of it is really that skipping the beat is kind of taking an inventory of where is that coming from? What is this stimulus that's that's hitting me, and then kind of putting it where it's got to go. If it's something that this isn't even worth my time, I don't need to consider it. You do that or. This person's angry, but they also have a point. So maybe I should try and consider that point. So
it's being mature, kind of.
That's a pretty good way to consider it. Yeah.
Well, so I just look through the 10 days. So is it 10 days and then you repeat them three times?
No, it's 30. It's going to
Every single day.
Yeah, it's.
Well, so the first one is just day one. I would fail immediately. Get out of bed an hour early. That means I'd have to wake up by like noon. I don't think so. But I do want to read what it says under the picture here because everyone who listens to the show will know that I always talk about how I sleep way too much and I am very lethargic and have a hard time waking up. So this quote is by, what's his name? Marcus
Aurelius.
Aurelius. And the way it's written out, it says Marcus Aurelius Meditations 5.1. It almost looks like a Bible verse, mm-hmm. the way they have that. I'm like, who's Marcus? I didn't remember him in the Bible. But the quote says, on those mornings you struggle with getting up, keep this thought in mind. I am awakening to the work of a human being. Why then am I annoyed that I am going to do what I'm made for, the very things for which I was put into this world? Or was I made for this, to snuggle under the covers and keep warm? It's so pleasurable. Were you then made for pleasure? In short, to be coddled or to exert yourself. I go through this dilemma every morning because when I'm under the covers, all I think is this feels so right. It's like you meet the person of your dreams and you do not want to let them go because it feels so right. That's me and sleep. And so whenever I peel the covers off, it feels wrong. I'm like, no, this is not what I'm supposed to do. It's like I feel physically completely sure that that's not for me. This is for me. But obviously, that's not the case. I'm a human being. I have working muscles and I'm functioning. And like, I know that that's not what I meant for, but it feels so right.
Well,
I don't know.
Like to speak to that one specifically and directly, I'm a terrible sleeper. So this isn't something where, oh yeah, I'm up at, 6 a.m. every morning ready to go. But it's, for me, the biggest part of it was, all right, let's take a look at, that aspect of my life and, let's make a concerted effort to improve that. You read through there and they go on to talk about Jocko Willink's 4:30 a.m. club. And it's like, holy cow, people are getting up at 4:30 a.m. and being productive. It's like, for me, it's much easier to be going to bed at 4:30 a.m. I'd read stuff before just about, chicken and egg thing with depression and disrupted circadian rhythm. So it's like, well, X amount of people in, civilization have 24-hour circadian rhythm or something close to it. These other people have an uninterrupted one. So it's like you would put 20 people into a controlled environment where, there's only external light cues and no clocks. And I don't know, the numbers, somewhere between 15 to 19 of them after a week would fall into the rhythm of going to sleep at the same time, waking up at the same time because their internal clock is taking over. And then there's those other people that would just end up going to bed later and later and later and later, especially because there was no cue saying, all right, now it's getting to kind of be weird o'clock. You got to go to bed. It's just, well, I feel fine. I feel awake. Why am I going to sleep?
Because sleep is amazing. So you're on day what of the challenge?
Day 10.
Okay. So far you've day one, gotten out of bed early. Mm-hmm. So each day has a different activity. Mm-hmm. Day two, take a cold shower. It's voluntary discomfort. That's what I'm doing right now, doing this podcast. So are you. Just kidding. Day three, write down 5 things you're thankful for. So this is way more doable than I was thinking it would be based off the name.
The best part is, just to circle back through those is, there's a couple pages of why you're doing these things and kind of what you're hoping to get out of it.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my question. Like, what comes after all this? So I'm just going to quickly run through the 10, mm-hmm, 10 mm-hmm. of these things. Day four, take a 1-hour walk. Day five, journal for 5 minutes in the morning, which we've talked about, I think, a bunch on the show. Day six, this is the other one I wouldn't be able to do. Day one and day six, I'm out. Day six, go today without complaining or criticizing. Not going to happen. Day seven, write a list of 5 role models, past, present, and analyze what makes them ideal. I would just write down myself. Just kidding. Day eight, write out the worst case scenario if you follow your dreams, then see how easy it would be to get back from that. Day nine, gaze into the stars for 15 minutes tonight. And I don't have a day 10. So those are all super doable things. And then there's 30 total of those. Mm-hmm. So what is the whole point? Like, what are you supposed to get from all of it?
Well, so the interesting, and you'll see his name repeatedly in there is Marcus Aurelius. And Meditations is now a 2,000-year-old book. And it's kind of the backbone for...
Oh, that's why it looks like Bible-y.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 2,000 years old. Marcus. I thought Marcus was like on Twitter.
No.
Maybe he is.
So
maybe he came back.
The best part of him, and especially today, is that he was Roman emperor. So he was the embodiment of a god come to earth, the most powerful person, in the known world in the time he was alive. And Meditations is not a book that he wrote for you or I to read or for anyone to read. This was his journal. He was keeping a journal and having conversations with himself. So you were looking into the insight of this person who was having conversations with himself and kind
of... Which I call conversation masturbation, by the way. I'll explain why later.
And he kept very, very close watch over, his ego and his interactions with people. And, again, talking about... This is why I have to get up. There's things going on. I mean, imagine the pressure of having a whole empire, on your shoulders, but...
I'm so glad that you're saying this, though, because it kind of goes back to everything that I was saying earlier with guys from whatever other era, so this was like the Roman Empire, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, having the same emotions that we're having today, and I love that I read that quote, And that applies from back then and now. It's just mind-blowing that people, we've always been the same. We've always, we're the same. It's so weird. Time is such a strange thing that that long ago, some dude laying in his bed was feeling the same way I do and everyone listening to this podcast does when they're trying to wake up in the morning. It's just crazy.
There's a great, another great one was, and to paraphrase, today I'm going to go, you know, hold public court and I'm going to hear from liars. I'm going to hear from thieves. I'm going to hear from cheats.
That's someone signing onto Twitter today.
And I'm not going to let it bother me. Now, mind you, for us, it's like maybe we could do that. For him, he verily just as easily could have said, this guy's dead, this guy's dead, this guy's dead, because I'm the emperor and that's how it's going to go. But with all the power in the world, he still chose to examine his behavior and consider how his behavior was going to be affected by, you know, these jerks on Twitter, these liars on Instagram, and so forth. So it's that's what makes it remarkable, where it's like, well, yeah, anybody would say that, but you know, if they had the power to do something about it, they would, but they don't. So that's why they're being humble. But
well, it's also good to know that assholes today would have been assholes back then, because I always think, oh, it would have been better to live in another time because people wouldn't have been as terrible. But people have always been terrible.
Oh yeah,
always.
Oh yeah.
So this is proof.
Yeah, for there was Adam and Eve, and, you know, there was marital strife, and then there was you know, a crowd, you know, there's an idiot in there somewhere. So it's like that's something that'll carry on throughout humanity, is just a whole bunch of jerks
always and forever.
Yes.
So tell me more about the challenge.
Well, the day six that you had mentioned, go without complaining or criticizing, it's actually pretty great if you really, you know, put your head down to do it. And you know, Tim Ferriss talked about it a bunch on his and they go into that on his podcast. It changes the way you think. And again, I'm not trying
to
speak from a position
carves,
of being holier than thou or anything.
I've talked about this before. When you're negative, it carves pathways, and then those, you know, it's like a stream or a river, and it just keeps going and carving it bigger and bigger and bigger, and that's where it's going
to
run.
If you can manage, I'm sure, you know, even if you catch yourself three or four times a day and say, you know what, instead of complaining, I'm going to, you know, speak aloud about, maybe I would have done this differently, even if it's just to yourself, or, you know, while you're driving, instead of, you know, flipping off, you know, the guy next to you, or wanting to flip off the guy next to you. And this borrows from This Is Water, David Foster Wallace, where maybe that person is speeding or driving erratically because, you know, something terrible happened to them, or they're in a hurry to get someplace and something.
I do try to do that when I'm feeling upset on the road. I think this is someone's grandmother, and she's a nervous wreck in the car right now, and I'm not going to make it worse for her. So, you know, I try to keep that in mind.
And even if nothing else, for me, I've gotten to the point of, and I'm as prickly a pear as they come, but I try and think to myself, I want to try and give this person the benefit of the doubt, because I hope somebody's out there giving me the benefit of the doubt. And, you know, that's a big thing of, you know, how can you possibly expect to be forgiven or understood if you don't take the time to forgive and to understand? And, you know,
great point.
I fail with it all the time, but it's something that I try as much as possible, you know, work through that and be in that position to consider.
Well, I always think when I let a guy in traffic, and then I let another guy in and another guy in, and then that one guy I don't let in, he doesn't know that I just let in four other dudes 2 minutes ago. And I always think, I hope he knows that this isn't my regular. I'm not letting him in because I'm a jerk. I'm not letting him in because I kind of can't, and I just let a million people in, and I need to also have respect for myself and need to also make it to
where
I'm going.
We're bad at, as a driving society, you know, that's the zipper. It's supposed to be, if they're, you know, two lanes going into one, it's one and one and one, and they keep alternating from either side. You're supposed to, you know.
Oh, don't even get me started. I'm not going to bore the listeners with a story about the zipper.
If you got a good story about the
zipper,
well, it's
not a great story. It's frustrating. I shouldn't say this. I dislike San Diego, because every time I was in San Diego, something ridiculous would happen in terms of road rage. And every time I was in San Diego, something would happen. So for example, I was in the right-hand lane once, not a turn-only lane. It's a two-lane road. You know, there's two lanes on one side, two lanes on the other. I'm at a red light. I'm simply sitting at the red light in the right-hand lane. There's no arrow to turn right in that lane. This dude flips out on me for not going right on red, But it wasn't like I was in a right turn only lane. I'm not going right. Yeah. And he flipped out. So it was like stuff like that that constantly happened when I'd be in San Diego. So anyway, leaving a Chargers game, Chargers Bills, Bills lost. We were terrible. It's not like we're like the Patriots or something and we're these ruthless fans that deserve to be like beaten over the head with how shitty we are. I was simply doing the zipper method, leaving the parking lot. Car in front of me went in. Then it was my turn. So then I went in. The guy to the right of me lost his goddamn mind on me. He ended up following me for miles.
Ooh.
It was insane. I'm like this. I didn't have the term zipper method, but I'm like, but that's what you do. Yeah, it's the every other one
rule. You
were
by the book, yeah.
I was by the book. Psycho. So anyway, any time I'd be in San Diego, something like that would happen. So anyway.
Did he get his satisfaction after several miles? Did he flip you off or shake a fist angrily at you?
He did, because eventually we parted ways off of whatever road we were going. Like, I went to the right, he went to the left, and him and whoever he was with, they were in a small pickup truck, both flipped me off out the window. And I'm like, you guys won the game. Why are you mad at me? I'm leaving here a loser. Clearly bummed. Just let me do the zipper method and go out with my tail between my legs because I'm a Bills fan. Jeez.
And then they got off on that exit, turned back around, and made the hour and a half drive to their home in the opposite direction.
I know.
Having won the battle.
Right. And that's the thing. To them, they won the battle, but they lost the battle because they weren't doing anything to reflect the stoic challenge.
Yes. Well, I mean, at a extremely pragmatic level, they just wasted however much time out of their lives. And it's like,
right, but what else are they doing?
Yeah, well, that's a bigger problem,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, but that's what I get for going to a football game. But anyway, okay, so what are we going to get out of this? Not that you're trying to sell this to us, but I think having some practical things that people can do is a good thing. I usually don't offer that kind of stuff on the show. So,
well,
if someone was looking to get something out of this, what would they be getting out of it?
Besides, I guess, the obvious, or some of them probably aren't that obvious, but the idea behind getting out of bed 1 hour early, not that you necessarily have to carry to that specific extreme, is that there's consideration for respecting yourself enough to give yourself a schedule. And if you know you're going to get up at this time, then from there you're going to build a routine. And you want to build out that
routine. Someone with a depressed brain like me says,
oh,
well, that's
here.
Just one more hour I have to exist.
Same here. No, same here. I can. But the idea is that, that's something else that you're going to have to tackle. And it's either going to never happen or it's going to happen some other way, maybe, hopefully. Or you decide to be an active participant in trying to make a change. Because it's, like we said, going back to certain things are going to suck no matter what. It's like if, your favorite TV show ends or your dog dies or, anything you're going through, it's going to suck no matter what. You don't get that choice. The choice you do have is, how you respond to it. And sure, there's going to be, a lot of crying. There's going to be a lot of disappointment. Watching the Bills will, lead to chronic disappointment. But
I have the same, I'm seeing spots and I have the same tingling things. And I think it's from being a Bills fan,
yes,
for all these years.
Oh,
and you would experience the same things. You're
absolutely
a Bills fan.
As an underlying symptom is being a Buffalo Bills fan.
You go to the neurologist and he's like, who do you like in the NFL? You're like, the Bills. He's like, all right, done. Take the Xanax. You need it.
So the idea is, it's like, well, if I can win this first battle of the day, then, whatever happens next. And then, at the back end of the day, you say, I've already committed to winning that first battle tomorrow. Let me, get to bed now. And again, that's something that I've struggled with for a lot of my life. But, it's something that, all right, I'm going to give this a shot and see what I can improve upon. And then the idea behind day two of taking a cold shower, it's not, oh yeah, it's just, let's just get nuts and, do something different.
Shrink my dick. That sounds fun. So don't take a shower with your partner.
You're not going to impress anybody with taking a cold shower. And I guess I use the cheat method, but it's, this is the way, Aubrey Marcus does it. And I took it from his book is, you hop in at whatever temperature you're going to, hop in and take your shower at. And then once you're done, with your grooming routine, then you turn it over to cold and you finish off your shower like that. I believe it's also called the James Bond shower. But then you're turning it over to cold. And the idea behind it, especially Aubrey Marcus talks about this, is...
Who's Aubrey Marcus?
He's
it's weird because his name's Marcus, just like the other guy.
Yeah.
And Marcus, what is the other?
Marcus Aurelius.
And then this guy's...
Aubrey Marcus.
Weird.
He's
kind of similar.
In his
30s, opposite.
He's got the supplement company On It, and he's got a great podcast. Former athlete, and you know the book is Own the Day, and it's a lot of these themes applied to. We're not going to make some cosmic shift in our day, but we're going to try and optimize every bit of it. And you know the idea behind the cold shower is, if you can commit to making this change and exposing yourself to something, you know, some voluntary discomfort, you'll start to recognize that opportunity in some of the other aspects of your life and throughout your day. So it's like, who's in charge here? My body saying don't do that because that's not comfortable, or my brain saying deal with it, face it, and get through it.
I've noticed that I am very prone to leaning toward comfort, as I'm sure so many people are, but it's like the waking up. I'm comfortable in bed. I don't want to wake up. I'm comfortable in a hot shower. I'm comfortable alone. I'm comfortable feeling sad. Everything I think about doing to me is the equivalent of jumping into a cold pool. Once you're in it, it feels refreshing. But getting in it, it's like, no. Like when I do go into an actual pool, there is a similarity here. Because when I go into an actual pool, I go very slow. I don't jump in. I literally go like toe, ankle, okay? 5 minutes, I'll stay at the toe, ankle, you know, dipping in. Then I go to the calf, 5 minutes, then the knee, then the vagina, then the, you know,
Do girls have that same problem with getting the
It feels the strange. Okay. Yeah, all of a sudden like it hits and you kind of stand right at that level. It's like, it's kind of trickling it or tickling it or something.
I think that's the toughest part of being a guy with cold water, jumping into like a cold pool or whatever like that.
Yeah, well, our things don't shrink, not that I know of. But I mean, but it's the sensation. But it's I take so much time to work my way in because I don't want to be uncomfortable, and I find that people who don't mind being uncomfortable are a lot more fun, have a lot more fun, are more successful. Like my sister jumps right in the pool. She's a fun person, not depressed. I think it's very symbolic the way I work my way into the pool versus the way she works her way into the pool. All right. Anyway, so next.
Write down 5 things you're thankful for. The twist on this is it's not going to be the cliche stuff of, you know, I'm thankful that I got my dog Snuggles and the sun shines on nice days and my best friend likes me. It's an opportunity to really examine your life. And I found myself writing down some strange ones where I was thankful for the health scare because it put into perspective the things I wanted to do with my life and, you know, in a way brought me towards being an active participant and trying to make some changes and some improvements. You choose to frame some negatives in your life as informative events or, you know, accomplishments that, you know, you made it through it, you changed, you know, and now you're a better, stronger person and a more thoughtful person, hopefully, from having gone through it.
So after you do all the 30 days, what do you achieve, quote, you know, in air quotes, at the end?
Well, hopefully it's a little internal better human being certificate that, you know, you're going to carry around in your mind. I'd also been, using a daily Stoic journal where it gives you themes for the week and prompts you to, you know, to respond to some different thoughts about that theme and you know, really kind of invites you to go into your own head about, you know, what you've got going on. So that's been, you know, another part of it. And so I think with the 30 days, the goal is to carry, you know, if not all of them, as many, you know, of these positive habits and changes that you've made with you going forward.
Cool. Well, this sounds like a good way to pick up new habits. Maybe I'll do it in 30 years. But now we're going to do some segments.
The first one we're going to do is Cooking with Carney. And Cooking with Carney is depression food and stuff that is pathetic that I've eaten because I have no will to feed myself and or cook. If you have anything pathetic that you've eaten or do eat on a regular basis, please feel free to add it in. But I'll start.
Sure.
So I don't know if I've talked about this before. I hope I haven't, because it hit me and I was excited to talk about it. And then I questioned whether or not I had talked about it already and was like, damn it. But I'm going to, just in case I haven't already talked about it. But I realized my entire life, I've been the same way. Like when I was younger, I couldn't wake up. When I was little, I couldn't prepare myself food. So when I was young, I didn't know how to make or cook anything. I was helpless. I've always been helpless. And so this is my vintage Cooking with Carney. So when I was a kid, If my parents were gone and my brother and sister were babysitting me, they would never make me food. And I was always used to my parents just making me food. And so I would make myself ice soup. Oh. It was all I knew how to do. I would get ice and water and I would put it in a bowl and I would bring it out and eat it in front. Like I'd like spoon it into my mouth in front of them so they could see.
You're making a spectacle of
how bad so they could see how desperate I was for them to feed me. But I would always go to ice soup. Obviously, I didn't, you know, have it as nourishment, but it was more like a plea or a desperate attempt to get them to help me eat better.
Well, what was the success rate on that maneuver?
Never. Maybe I'd get a bag of Doritos or something. But yeah, they would never give me food. Like, you get it. I don't know how to get it. So anyway, ice soup. If anyone wants to try it, the directions are super simple. The recipe is very easy.
There's going to be a link to it?
There'll be a link online. And it's only got a 4-star rating, but that's because people are using the wrong ice. So you have to use, no, I'd use cubed ice. We didn't, you know, back then, especially, there was no like, you know, refrigerator.
We're in a nice
ready to go.
Now,
ice, right, right. We were in the dark ages. So I had ice cubes,
trays,
like the actual
the trays.
Yeah. Right. So just crack some ice out of the tray. Get your crummiest bowl possible. You don't want to have this in a nice bowl. And so you can really see the bowl because the water is clear, the ice is clear. And you'll really get to take in how pathetic this is. And then just pour some water in there directly from the faucet. None of this filtered British shit. No bottled water. And serve with a spoon.
Bonus points, yeah, for being as pathetic as possible. Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything that you've eaten either like?
Trying to think about it. I don't know that there'd be anything specific. I think, I don't have a story up there with the ice
like,
soup.
Yeah, well, normally I don't go as epic as ice soup. Normally I'm more in the realm of spaghetti sauce on ramen noodles, like the package, because I didn't have any pasta. Like stuff like that.
Were
it's
you,
just kind
were
of
Were
pathetic.
You curious or that was a conscious effort?
I was desperate. And I was like, well, they're noodles. It can't be that bad. You know, so stuff like that. I look at the fridge, I stare, and I see stuff that's easily accessible. I just have to put it together and I'm like, no, that's too much work. And then I will eat nothing and or have a cheese stick.
Oh yeah, well that's you know easiest grab, you know, first in first out type of deal. That makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah.
If it's why would I put these three things together when I can eat them at various points through the next 45 minutes individually?
Right.
Get the cheese sticks out, maybe do I want to have that marinara sauce with something else or maybe a couple spoons of that and
I'll do a lot of the dip in, have a little of this, a little of that. I don't ever want to like take a bunch of stuff out of the fridge that I have to then put back into smaller containers because I used enough of it to then
reconfigure,
have to compartmentalize. Too much work. All right, well, that was our cooking with Carney segment.
I'm excited to try your recipe for the ice soup.
Okay, I'll send you the link.
Yes.
Okay, next segment, depression impression, which is usually where we talk about someone with depression in the spotlight or of some notoriety, depression, bipolar, whatever it is. But for some reason, every time I've been doing this lately, I've been talking about suicide. So it's more like a suicide impression, even though I'm not trying to make it that. But I was watching a documentary or a biography on Jane Fonda recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down, my dad was watching it, and I'm like, care about Jane Fonda, like, oh, this is gonna be really boring. Ended up being very interesting. But her mother is who I wanted to talk about, and her mother's name was Frances Ford Seymour, and she married Henry Fonda, who was a famous actor,
mm-hmm.
who was known to be a massive a-hole. But she ended up committing suicide at the age of 42. Jane Fonda was 12, and she committed suicide in a hospital. It wasn't necessarily a mental hospital. It was a sanatorium, which is a hospital for prolonged illness.
Mm-hmm.
But she committed suicide 3.5 months after Henry Fonda asked her for a divorce. But Jane Fonda asked for her mother's medical records and found out that her mother had been sexually assaulted many, many, many times.
Oh,
and she had 9 abortions. So I don't know if those were from rapes or what they were from. But she had tons of plastic surgery. She was very difficult to connect with. And Jane always blamed herself. And then once she got her medical records, she attributes a lot of her mental health problems to all of the sexual assaults that she experienced throughout her life. And so tragic.
Yeah, that's definitely, and that's especially from Jane's perspective, not knowing that. So, you know, you're looking at the situation saying, you know, what am I doing wrong?
You're 12 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, that's such a fragile time to experience something like that. And I was saying before, when Kyle was on the show, I was joking around saying how kids seem to overcredit themselves when it comes to their parents' divorce. It's like, you're not that special. They're not divorcing because of you. Mm. Like, you don't give yourself that much credit. But in a situation, I can see how you would think, she didn't love, it was me, I was making her miserable. And but, you know, as a kid, you don't have the tools mentally, but also you don't have the evidence.
Yeah, and you haven't taken a lap yet in life to see, you know,
right,
come across broken people and you know, having seen a before and an after. Everything's new in the first time, and especially, you know, these are the first people you meet. These are the first people that introduce you to the world and how it works.
Yep. All right, so our last segment is going to be one that I haven't done in quite some time, called Freudian Slips. So I'm just going to say a word, and then you give me your first response back.
Okay.
And we'll go kind of fast.
Okay.
And you write poetry, and like, you're deeper, so I have high expectations of you on this.
I was just thinking, I'm worried I'm going to do terribly.
But even with you being a quote-unquote deeper person, you'll still do bad. That's this what, is very
yeah,
hard.
Yeah.
I did it before, and I thought I'll give the most interesting responses. I was probably the worst out of anybody. All right, so just random words I'm going to give you. Duck.
Goose.
Headstone.
Tombstone.
Banana.
Peel.
Radio.
Head.
Ponytail.
Blonde.
Twitter.
Trump.
Interesting. Plastic.
Fake plastic trees by Radiohead.
Wow, a lot of Radiohead stuff. Reclining chair.
Lazy boy.
Dinghy.
Boat.
Bridge.
And tunnel.
Wheelchair.
Lieutenant Dan.
That's good. High top sneakers.
You always wear high tops instead of low tops.
Yep, I knew that's what you were going to say, so I put it there. I'm wearing low tops right now, by the way.
Good.
Awards.
The Grammy Awards.
Scissors.
Edward Scissorhands.
Last one. Slinky.
An elephant's trunk.
Oh, wow. Okay, that was the most interesting response. I can see how that would look like a slinky. But yours, I mean, they're so basic.
Yeah.
I would think people would spit out the shit that's really going on in their mind. But we all just say like the most basic thing, like duck, goose, headstone, tombstone, banana, peel. Like, we all revert to being super low IQ.
Oh yeah, this whatever for me is whatever. What pops in your head visually, you know, there, or you know, if it elicits a phrase.
Right, but like, you know, banana, maybe phallic, but no one really. It never really goes that direction. We're not as that much is really going on in a split second.
Next time you do that, you're gonna have to precondition whoever you do it with. Like, if I would be sure if you ran all those by somebody after talking about the reproductive cycle or an adult actress or something like that, you'll get at least one or two you know, sexually charged responses to
it like subliminal messages. There's a sketch back in like the 90s with Kevin Nealon on SNL where it was Subliminal Message Man
or something like that.
And they'd be talking, you know, he'd be having conversations and just say sex and then keep talking and they wouldn't know if, like, that happened. All right, well, this was very fun.
Good,
thanks for doing it.
I'm definitely glad to be on board.
I'm definitely not going to do the Stoic Day Challenge, but I will challenge myself to set my alarm clock every day going forward because I cannot keep sleeping until 1 or 2 in the afternoon.
All right, if you had to choose one of three alarm clocks, one of them being there's a little gizmo that runs away. It's like almost like a robot. It runs away. You got to chase it down.
Mm-hmm.
The other one being you put money in a shredder, and if you don't wake up to stop it, the money gets shredded. Or three, and it's run by volunteers, a stranger is going to call you and have to have a conversation at the time you want to wake up. Right?
Ooh. Have you talked about this before? These were all great.
No, I've seen the, again, I a psycho about looking up all the different options there are. What's going to help me get out of bed?
Wow.
And I'm like, I don't want to talk to a stranger. I would lose a lot of money, and I would probably give up on that. That robot pretty quickly.
I would keep my door open so the robot thing worked its way out of my room and down the stairs and broke its neck. The money thing, because I'm very tight on it, that would probably be the scariest. But that says a lot about how tight I am on money, because I would hate to have a conversation with a stranger, especially in the morning. I can do it, but I don't want to. But I would probably have to say the money thing. Cause that's how desperate I am. Even though I think the stranger thing is worse, that's how desperate I am with the money thing right now that I need to. So anyone wanting to contribute to the fund to get me the alarm clock with the people coming around, go to patreon.com/mentallychill and support the show so that I don't have to worry about money so much. But yeah. Ooh, those are nasty options.
Yeah, right.
The first one's definitely the easiest. Like, no. But what I think is, you know, I would just go take the money out, shut the alarm off, and go back to sleep.
So it wouldn't occur to you, well, I'm up.
No, I do that all the time. I did it today. I woke up and I was like, well, you know, it's like 11. It was like 11:15 by the time I actually got out of bed. And I thought, well, I don't want to start the day yet. That's too much day. I don't want to have to go till midnight. And how many hours is that? It's like a full day. 12 hours, 12 to 12.
I mean, that's to do that.
I mean, people go much longer than that, 15 hours, 16 hours. I'm like, I don't want to do 12 hours. So I will just go, well, I'm just going to get back in bed until I feel like I'm emotionally ready to exist. And then I'll get out of bed.
Catch the next emotional bus for the day.
Mm-hmm. And it's filthier than a greyhound. It's nasty. Jeez. All right. Well, catch Dan in your dreams. And if you guys want to support the show again, please go to patreon.com/mentallychill. And just so you guys know, I just finished a live stream tonight with some Patreon subscribers, and it was a very special Patreon live stream because my family was there. They got to see the full action of my mom, dad, grandmother, sister, and niece out back, because it was a very warm day today, oddly enough, eating dinner, and everyone said hello. And yeah, so if you want to join in on that kind of fun action, we're actually going to be doing a movie night for Halloween. So a scary movie we'll all watch together over the computer. It's in a chat room. And we'll be doing that on October 26th, which is a Friday. And we'll probably do it, I would say, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 9:30 Pacific. I don't know if that's too, it's too early for the East Coast. And it's like, if I go any later, it's too late for the West Coast. So
did you pick out a movie yet?
I didn't pick out a movie yet, but I will soon.
Will there be voting?
No, I'm not. This isn't a democracy. No,
that's good.
I'm like, what's his name? I reign over my people.
You get ice soup or you get nothing.
Exactly. If I can get access to Heredity, I've heard that's pretty scary and pretty good. So I'll do Heredity, but that was just in theater. So I don't know if I'll be able to get it this quickly.
What about, have you seen A Quiet Place?
Is that with, what's his name? And they did it in Little Falls?
Yep.
Didn't like it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. I'm not into alien things. Don't find alien things to be scary. Yes, you get a little bit on the edge of your seat, but it's just aliens, been there, done that. Not that interesting. I like more of a ghoulish, haunty, psycho, creepy, deathy
something
thing.
Scary, like spending the day with strangers.
Yes. That's the scariest. All right, you guys. Well, thanks for listening. And please rate the show 5 stars if you enjoy the show. If not, just please avoid the whole rating thing in general. If you don't like the show, there are no such things as ratings. Hint, hint, don't rate the show. But if you do, please rate it 5 stars. And remember, stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye, guys.